You know what time it is. It's time for Ask a Spaceman. I'm your host, Paul Sutter. You've got questions and I've got answers. You know how the show works. But let's take a dip one more time. You go online to Twitter or Facebook, use the hashtag Ask a Spaceman. Send me questions. You can also email me at askaspaceman@gmail.com. You can also follow me directly on Twitter and Facebook. My name is at Paul Matt Sutter. And of course, there is the ever-present website, askaspaceman.com. There's YouTube too. Do not forget YouTube. YouTube.com/PaulMattSutter is the place to be if you're interested in space. We have one simple goal with this show: complete knowledge of time and space. And on the road to complete knowledge of time and space is, well, I have to set up this question. Before I get to the question, I want you to know from the bottom of my heart, I cannot emphasize this strongly enough, I did not intend to do another black hole episode so soon. Black holes are awesome, but I try to space them out, and you can decide if that pun was intended or not. I try to space them out because this show isn't Ask a Spaceman about black holes. It's Ask a Spaceman about all sorts of stuff in space, not just black holes. So I don't want to paint myself into a corner where all the show is about black holes. But here we are doing another episode about black holes. They are fascinating objects. They're weird. They cut right to the heart of the fundamental incompatibility between gravity and quantum mechanics. And this issue about black holes came to light last week, and you can decide again if that pun was intended or not. Last week, I was in New York filming some interviews for the Science Channel's How the Universe Works series. I spent 3 whole days filming, answering over 500 questions about space. I'm not exaggerating. They counted, and they counted to a number greater than 500, but less than 600, presumably. And who knows how much of it will end up on air, probably 30 seconds of me saying something dumb, and then they'll cut to someone more respectable. And it's probably especially on this topic. And I can't tell you exactly what the episodes are going to be about, but you can imagine that in a show about space, like Ask a Spaceman or How the Universe Works, the subject of black holes comes up. And a specific question came up about 6 hours into the first day. I'm sitting on a rock-hard stool. My butt fell asleep hours before that. I was in a weird mental state already, in this weird zone where I'm just physically uncomfortable but mentally very happy because I'm talking about space, but I'm thinking on my feet. I'm going, bang, 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 bang. You know, question. What about this? What about that? Can you tell us about this? What are your perspectives on this? What's a clever metaphor? Blah, blah, blah. Like, having a great time. Trust me, having an absolute fabulous time. And it was in a Manhattan high-rise, actually. They booked an apartment in Manhattan with these awesome double windows, floor-to-ceiling windows, and a corner that looked out over Midtown Manhattan. Beautiful place. We're just going to pretend I live and or work there, which is fine by me. And a question came up during that first day. Do black holes exist? And I was stuck. Things have been going so smoothly up to that point, but with that question, I had a mini existential crisis. I could not process a coherent answer. There were so many conflicting thoughts happening in my brain at once that my mouth just wouldn't speak words. I just stared at the producer, just, nothing would come out. And so I had to take a breath, you know, ask for a break. Let's drink some water. Let's chat it out. And the reason I was stuck was that the answer that first came to my mind was, of course, black holes do not exist. Of course. But I realized, you know how TV is, that if I said that, if I just blurted out, no, black holes don't exist. Are you kidding me? They would take that segment, that little blurb, they would put me at the top of the episode of some scientists are insane and they think black holes don't exist. And they cut to me saying, of course black holes don't exist. And then they introduce some more serious scientists in the show that, you know, present all the evidence and how we know that black holes exist. And that would be it. And then my whole career as a science communicator and educator would be over. And probably my entire career as a scientist would be over. No one would take me seriously. I explained that to the producers, that I was a little bit worried. They laughed. They said, don't worry, we've already been recording for over 6 hours. You've said enough stuff that we can chop you up and make you say anything we want. And then they laughed some more. And I really, really hope they were joking about that part. I was stuck because I wanted to blurt out that black holes do not exist. But this is where the conflict came in. Black holes do exist. But they kind of don't. It really depends on what you mean by the word exist. And I'll get to this in a little bit, but mentally, I just kept flipping back and forth. Black holes don't exist. Well, of course they do. Of course they don't. Of course they do. Of course they don't. I couldn't give them a soundbite, so instead, I gave them a shortened version of what I'm about to tell you. And I was so struck by this moment that I just had to interrupt my plans. I was planning on doing a completely different episode this month. I just had to put it off because I wanted to get this point across because it actually opens up some really, really interesting points about physics and reality. I wanted to talk to you about it. Fortunately, I dug through and there was a related question from Mandy. How do we know the inside of a black hole? How do we know what's going on beneath the event horizon, a region we can't see? So that's technically the question for the episode, but really comes from these Science Channel producers who asked me if black holes exist. It seems like a simple, obvious yes, no question. So why isn't this episode 10 seconds long? Why was I having an existential crisis in front of a camera? Because it's not a simple, obvious yes, no question. I'll give you a brief overview of my internal conflict, and then I'll go into these bits and flesh them out a little bit more. Black holes are a theoretical construct. They're a product of a particular mathematical machinery, the machinery known as general relativity. So they don't exist. They're a model. They're an abstraction. Descriptions of reality shouldn't be confused with reality itself. Black holes don't exist. Ladies and gentlemen, electrons do not exist. An electron is a model. An electron is an approximation. Black holes are a model. Black holes are a product of mathematics. But if electrons and black holes don't exist, what about stars and planets, the electromagnetic force? What about you? What about me? You can see where I was having some issues on camera. How far down the rabbit hole was I willing to go? But black holes do exist. We see evidence for them all over the place, and I'll get to that. Just like electrons, we see, when it comes to electrons, we see this little thing floating around that makes electricity happen, and that exists. We have observational evidence that black holes exist. I mean, come on, they're right there. And so I think the core of my on-camera dilemma was my dismay at the word exist. And here's where that dismay comes from. Physics is a mathematical description of the natural world. That's it. These mathematical descriptions are models and approximations. We give names to those models and approximations. These models and approximations don't exist unless you believe that math in some sense is real, but that's a discussion for another lifetime. So we have these mathematical descriptions that we use to understand the natural world, but we also have the natural world itself. We have sets of related observations of the natural world. For example, we look at a massive object, like a planet. It attracts other massive objects. That attraction drops off as the square of the distance. Or we observe a small point-like object that has properties that we denote as mass, charge, and spin, and this point-like object can be bound to atoms, but it can also roam around independently. I certainly hope that these natural phenomena that we are observing exist, unless you believe that nothing is real, but then that's also a discussion for another lifetime. So we have mathematical descriptions of reality and we have observations of reality. And here's the problem as I see it. We give the same name to both the observed phenomenon and the mathematical description for it. For example, the word gravity is assigned both to the observed feature of the natural world that massive objects attract in a certain way. We call that gravity. But we give that name to general relativity itself. General relativity is our best way of describing that observed phenomenon. It's a mathematical model. But we call that gravity too. I'm guilty of this exact same thing. Instead of saying gravity is best modeled as the geometry of space-time in response to matter and energy, I say gravity is the geometry of space-time in response to matter and energy. I make that equivalence all the time personally. And I think in almost all cases, this laziness, not the best word here, but this equivalence is just fine. We take that connection for granted that really we're talking about two different things, the observed phenomenon and the mathematical model that best describes it, that they're different things, but we're going to, for convenience sake, we're going to give the same label to both of them. And we take for granted that both of these can change as we learn more. Our understanding of the natural phenomenon called an electron will change over time as we make more observations of that electron. And our understanding of a model electron, our theoretical, our mathematical description of that phenomenon, will change as we make more theoretical advances. And these go hand in hand. The model changes and our set of observations changes. But they're both describing the same thing. They're both assigned to the word electron. And you can have one without the other. You can have a set of observed phenomena with no theoretical model to describe it. Welcome to my everyday life. And you can have theoretical constructs with no observational counterpart. Welcome to another part of my daily life. That, you know, this is the game of science, is trying to match up theoretical models with observational counterparts. When these two are successfully connected, you get physics, you get chemistry, you get biology, you get science. So what does this have to do with black holes? This distinction between observed phenomena and mathematical descriptions for it. I think when it comes to black holes, we should be careful to pull these two facets apart and almost examine them separately. Because when it comes to the theory side, the math side of black holes, we're in a unique position. We know that our mathematical descriptions of black holes are incomplete. There's a place. The math even tells us where. There's a place in the black hole where we know our model breaks down, and that place is called the singularity. The mathematics that describe black holes, what we get out of general relativity, predicts certain properties, the event horizon, the inescapable gravity, the charge, the mass, the spin, on and on and on and on. That's all fine and gravy, but it also predicts a singularity at the center, a point of infinite density. Literally everything swallowed by a black hole must reach the singularity in finite time, by the way. Once you cross the event horizon, you have no choice but to hit the singularity in a fixed amount of time. That is a unique property inside black holes. But once you reach that singularity, you are crushed into an infinitely small point. But nature doesn't really have singularities, right? Right? I mean, I'm not the only one that thinks this. I'm not crazy for insisting that nature doesn't really have infinities. When infinities appear in the mathematics, yeah, I talked about this when I did the episode on quantum gravity. When infinities appear in the mathematics, it's a swear word, and Mother Nature doesn't like it when we swear. We cannot describe nature with infinity sprinkled around our equations. We can't make progress. The math breaks down. We can't make predictions. We can't do science. We know that when an infinity appears in one of our equations, we know our theory is incomplete. Our mathematics are inadequate to fully describe the physical picture. The singularity at the center of a black hole is a signpost. It's saying, hey guys, hey, Your math is incomplete. You're doing something fundamentally wrong. You need to figure something else out. So boom, case closed. Black holes don't exist. We know our mathematical description is incomplete. The mathematical description predicts singularities. We know singularities don't really appear in nature. So black holes do not exist. So why do we think they exist? Let's take a brief history lesson. Einstein made a machine called general relativity. General relativity is a set of equations that can be applied in many, many, many different scenarios. He made the machinery, he continued on, and then other people like Schwarzschild took that same machinery and started concocting solutions, started applying it to different scenarios in our universe. Some of these solutions seem to apply in the real universe, like gravitational lensing, like the orbit of Mercury, like the expansion of the universe. These are solutions to the machinery. These are products of the machine of general relativity. And there's applications. Oh, you can explain this. Oh, you can explain that. Oh, it applies to that situation. This is great. Other products of that machine are a little bit more fanciful, like the solution developed by Kurt Gödel, where the universe is rotating and it allows time travel into the past. That's a product of the machine of general relativity, but it does not apply to our universe. Same thing as wormholes. Wormholes are a product of the general relativity machine, but it doesn't look like wormholes actually exist. Schwarzschild's particular solution to general relativity was a pretty basic setup, just a heavy ball in the middle of nothing else. If I've got a heavy ball of something in the middle of absolutely nothing else, what does general relativity teach us about the behavior of that object and any other objects that might encounter it? That particular solution, that result of the machinery of general relativity applied in this case, carries a particularly weird number. It's called the Schwarzschild radius, and it's a distance, and it's very, very small. Within that radius, things get funky. The mathematics that you would use to describe the effects of gravitational force inside that very small radius just get weird. And we thought, oh, well, that's weird. But hey, the radius is super small, you know, way smaller than the sun, for the example. And things in real life are pretty big, so we can ignore that part. Yes, when we're using the Schwarzschild solution to study, say, the solar system, this little radius appears in the mathematics. Anything within that radius acts really, really, really funky. But we can just ignore that because that's really small compared to the scales that we're interested in. We can just pay attention to everything else and everything's hunky-dory, peachy keen. But what if objects could be shrunk below the Schwarzschild radius? What if you could take the sun and squeeze it down to small enough volume that its Schwarzschild radius was on the outside of it, not the inside? What if you compress an object so much that the funky physics were a part of our universe? They were accessible. That wasn't just a weird mathematical artifact, but it was something that could happen. Could you actually do it? This was the big question. Could you actually compress an object, a real object in our physical universe, so small that it was smaller than its Schwarzschild radius? And all the funky physics that happens, eventually we'll give a label to all this funky physics, we'll call them black holes, that a black hole would appear. For a long time, it was thought, no, nah, nature just can't reach that high of densities. It won't form singularities. It won't form event horizons. Black holes are not a thing. But then we discovered white dwarfs. And then we discovered neutron stars. Neutron stars, what happens when you take two or three solar masses worth of material and cram it down to the size of a city? That's pretty dense by any standard. It's right at the edge of that line. It's right there. If it was just a little bit more dense, it would cross that boundary and become what we call a black hole. We thought, okay, very funny nature. You almost got us. You almost made this black hole thing a reality. But the most dense you can get is a neutron star that's all we see in the universe. You got us, nature. You almost tricked us. You almost tricked us. But then we started running the numbers for what happens during a supernova explosion, or right before a supernova explosion. You can run the numbers for the pressures, the temperatures, and the densities. And not every time a star dies, it turns into a white dwarf or a neutron star. Sometimes enough material can be squeezed beneath its Schwarzschild radius, which means nature seems to have plausible generating mechanisms for black holes. So maybe they could happen? Maybe, but for a long time, for, you know, another couple decades, it was thought that something must prevent the formation of a black hole. Nature doesn't like singularities, so nature must obviously not like generating black holes. So if nature, can you do us a favor and just, you know, make sure black holes never, ever happen? That would be swell. Just like they said how Patreon would never work, but it does. Patreon.com/PM Sutter is how you keep this show and all of my science outreach and communication efforts going. I can't do the show without your incredibly generous contributions, and I can't thank you enough. Patreon.com/PM Sutter. If you're not already donating, you should. I don't hope you feel guilty. That's a very mean thing to say, because you shouldn't have to spend money on this. Let's just stick with the I'm very grateful for your contributions if you are so moved to contribute. There's no guilt at all involved here. Maybe a little. No, I promise. No guilt at all. Anyway, nature, could you please just not let black holes happen? Then we wouldn't have to worry about singularities. We wouldn't have to worry about event horizons. We could just sweep it under a rug. Say, okay, that's a bad product of general relativity, but we got all this other useful stuff out of the machinery. But the model of black holes, like if you go all the way, if you say, you know what, maybe black holes do exist, there's certain observable consequences. It's testable. This is science. You can say, maybe this thing exists. Let's go out looking for it. And dang it, we see evidence for it. We look at binary companions. We see one star orbiting another, and a bunch of gas is being ripped off that star and being compressed onto a very, very small volume. As it heats up, it starts to emit X-rays, and we can see the X-rays. And when you run the numbers of, man, this companion orbiting this dying star, whatever's sucking down the gas has to be really small, has to be really dense. And when you calculate how small it is and how dense it is, it fits the definition of a black hole. When we look in the direction of the center of the Milky Way galaxy, we see a bunch of stars orbiting a patch with no light coming out of that patch. But we can see the orbit of the stars around it. And we ask, okay, based on the orbits, how big is that thing? What's its density? What's its mass? Oh, it's a supermassive black hole. There's nothing else that fits. What about quasars? Quasars, we see quasars, these tremendous radio X-ray, just some of the most brightest sources in our universe, some of those powerful engines ever to form in our universe. Oh, what could possibly power them? What could the gravity of a black hole. Shoot. Oh, and what about these gravitational waves? Like if two black holes were to collide, they would stir up space-time, they would generate some waves, and if we make a really sensitive experiment, there'll be a very distinct signature that's created by two merging black holes. Oh, we see that. We see that. Okay. So, we have tons of evidence all over the place that black holes exist, and they have all the predicted properties of black holes. They don't look like neutron stars. They don't look like white dwarfs. You can concoct alternate explanations like quark stars, dark matter stars, or maybe it's clumps of matter, you know, blah, 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 blah. But they're not as good as black holes when explaining nature. There's a fun word we use here in physics called parsimonious. What's the most parsimonious way to explain the data? What's the most frugal way to explain the data? And it's black holes. So the evidence mounts and black holes exist. They're not just a fanciful theoretical product of the machinery of general relativity. We're kind of surrounded by them. There are interesting anti-parallels here with the concept of wormholes. Both started as products of the math, as theoretical constructs, but eventually evidence grew that black holes could A, be generated, and B, produce observable predictions that we go find in nature. That didn't happen with wormholes, which is why I can confidently say that wormholes don't exist, but here we are with black holes. Black holes exist! We see them. Well, not really. You can't see them because they're black, but you get the idea. We have evidence that they exist. Just like stars, galaxies, planets, the works, they're part of the universe. But singularities don't happen. They're a breakdown of the physics. General relativity is incomplete in describing black holes. We know that the singularity doesn't exist and must be replaced by something else. What is that something else? We don't know. And that answer can only be provided by a quantum description of gravity, which we don't have. It'd be really nice if we did, but we don't. Or at least not yet. Or maybe never. Maybe we'll never find a solution, which is kind of sad to think about. So that's a whole other, that's a different existential crisis that we don't need to get into now. Whatever we replace the theoretical construct black hole, the mathematics of the black hole as produced by general relativity, must look a lot like our current picture of black holes because there's so much evidence for them. You know, it must feature something like an event horizon. It must feature something like an inescapable gravity, small compact volume. It must match all these observations of binary companions of the center of our galaxy, of quasars, of gravitational waves. It has to match those. So black holes don't exist because our understanding of them is manifestly incomplete. We can even point to right there in the math. We can point to it on page. See right there, that little bit right there. Yeah, it's because of that we know that our description of black holes is incomplete. But black holes do exist. We have evidence for these objects that look and talk and walk and quack. Do all the things that black holes ought to do as predicted by the same machinery of general relativity. General relativity says black holes must do A, we see A. Black holes must do B, we see B. Black holes must do C, we see C, etc., etc. Oh, but singularities don't exist. But everything else is legit. So what I tell the Science Channel, and I doubt this will make it to air, quote-unquote black hole, the name black hole as the set of observed phenomena that exists. We see it. Quote-unquote black hole, the name we give to the theoretical construct, is incomplete. And it doesn't exist. It's not done yet. So we'll see where that goes. You can see, I hope you can see, why I had a little bit of trouble articulating this in front of a camera on the spot. It's not an easy question. Thanks so much to all my Patreon contributors, and especially Helgi B, Justin G, Justin R, Kevin O, Jessica K, and Chris C, the top contributors this month. They don't have to be the top every time. You can be in the top list. So just go to patreon.com/PMSutter to learn more. I would like to thank Mandy and the producers of How the Universe Works on the Science Channel for launching today's inquiry into the existence of black holes. You can keep those questions coming to #AskASpaceman on Twitter and Facebook. Also go to AskASpaceman.com or follow me directly. My name is @PaulMatzer. You can also go to iTunes. Go ahead, leave a review. Leave a 5-star review if you think black holes don't exist. Also leave a 5-star review if you think black holes do exist. Either way, what's most important is a 5-star review. Those exist, and those help keep this show going. I can't thank you enough for all your support in every episode, and I will see you next time with more Complete Knowledge of Time and Space.